Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to the Fly Girl Show. I am your host, Casey Grant, and I don't know where you are, but where I am and looking out my window, the sun is shining. I think it's going to be 45, and that is a heat wave for Chicago. So we are having a beautiful day. And so with that, I have a wonderful conversation with a wonderful person, a dear friend of mine today. We know that this is Black History Month. And so I'm bringing you Black history in the form of a handsome man, a pilot. We are going to discuss some of the ins and the outs of being one of the first Black pilots for Delta Airlines. And as you guys all know, I started in 71, and so I broke my color barriers as far as being a flight attendant. And so John is going to give us his story on what it was like to break the color barrier with the Delta Airlines being among the first African-American flight attendants. So John started in 73, and he flew for 31 years, and I am going to let him fill in the rest of this wonderful story and some of the trials and tribulations that he had to deal with. So with that point, let me please bring in my wonderful guest, my dear friend. Hello, John Bailey. How are you doing this today?
Fine, Casey Grant. How are you?
I'm doing great. I'm doing great. As I said, this is Black history. So we're going to sit back, relax, talking about a little bit of Black history. And you know what the interesting thing is, and I'm going to jump from the beginning to the end, and I know you're going to talk about it, but to see how have we progressed, digressed, or need improvement, that hasn't improved. You know, this is a walk down memory lane, so let's get going here. Let's talk about your early days. Obviously, but you flew in the Air Force. So give us a little background on John Bailey.
Well, actually, I started flying as part of the Air Force ROTC flight. Yes, prior to going into the Air Force, it's sort of like an orientation program or you might call it a screening program to see who has what it takes to be a pilot. So they treat you to roughly 14 hours of flight time, and I succeeded in that in the late 60s, 67, 68. After I graduated, then I was able to go to Air Force pilot training in Laredo, Texas. I flew the T-30, the T-41, the T-37, the T-38 advanced jet. And then as an Air Force pilot, I flew globally, worldwide, in the C-141A version before going to Delta in 1973.
Well, you know, it's interesting to me, and this is just interjecting in your thoughts, because pilots, we always say we fly this plane, we fly that plane. For people who aren't in aviation, can you give us a description of what a C, whatever you said you flew, what kind of plane is that? I mean, I know it's super fast because it's in the Air Force, so give us a breakdown on what that plane is, because people always just, I flew on the 747. But if you don't know what a 747 is, you don't realize how big that plane is.
Right. Correct. Well, let me just say this. In the Air Force, as a pilot, you may fly anything from a supersonic jet to a C-5, almost a million-pound cargo jet.
Okay.
So my final aircraft in the pilot training was a T-38, in which I was able to fly supersonic. With an instructor. In that case, I was solo, and so you're flying faster than the speed of sound. The C-141, the cargo jet, four engines, weighing roughly 450,000 pounds. So your cruising speed in that case is roughly 70% of the speed of sound, or roughly 100 miles an hour, depending on altitude, air density.
Well, that gives us a little a picture in our mind, because, you know, we throw them out and we don't know. We just go, oh, he's a pilot. He flew a big plane. But but with that description, I think that might help my audience just get a better picture of what you did. So go ahead. All right. So you flew this in the Air Force. Okay. And then from there.
Okay. Well, the end of my career in the Air Force, I was able to fly the C-47, which it was built in 1932. It's a two-engine recip, and basically I would fly probably slower than most people drive. The cruising speed was roughly 105 miles per hour. So at about 120, and you know, you're close to what we would fly in knots, as far as statute miles. So that was very slow, but we did the job in Vietnam. That's what was required of me to basically be a spy for the Air Force to find out where the bad guys were.
Okay.
And so the transition from that Air Force aircraft, that reciprocating engine, you understand, propeller-type engines, to a jet engine is a transition that not everyone can make. It's it's part of the way an engine operates, a jet engine. And you probably saw the 777 United engine that pretty much exploded on takeoff.
Exactly,
You can see that type of engine versus a reciprocating engine with propellers. Big difference. From engine to how the engine performs and how fast you go. Mm-hmm. Imagine... You understand the term reverse thrust?
Mm-hmm.
Well, in reverse thrust with a jet engine, you simply put door shells, the clam doors, in the exhaust portion of the engine that takes the thrust forward, which slows you down.
Mm-hmm.
With a reciprocating engine, all you're doing is changing the pitch on the blade in order to get that airflow forward to slow the aircraft down. So just a total difference in how an engine operates.
Well, let me ask a question, and this is how I felt when I looked at it. And I don't know, this is my being a flight attendant looking at it, things that we learned. To me, we all know, we don't know, all know, but we've always been taught, you know, that if we lost an engine during flight, that's not the time to panic. The time to panic is when you try to, you know, you're trying to approach a landing and something's on the runway, so to speak, and you want to pull up. That's the dangerous part, because you won't have enough thrust to pull the plane back up. So far, am I correct?
Yes, you are.
Okay. And so to me, when I looked at the engine and it was, yes, on fire, number one, because I'm sitting in my living room looking at it on TV, I felt as long as with the casing being on the outside, there's a lot of the fire and things like that we don't get to see anyway. So some of that fire, even though that was more then, but some of that fire or that you see would be normal anyway, but it's covered because of the covering. My thought was when I looked at it, that's what I said. I said, well, at this point, it's still operating, but you're getting to see how it does operate. And if the cover were on, we wouldn't see it. As long as that engine didn't fall off, the chances are, and I would think the captain had some sense of relief and hope that he was going to make it because of some of the things I just said. Am I right or am I wrong?
You're partially right. In that case, what you saw was the combustion chamber of the engine. Part of it was the compressor portion, along with the nose bullet and compressor vanes. And what will happen in a situation where you've got an engine fire is you have what we call T-handles. And with that one handle, one switch, you're able to cut off all fuel, hydraulics, oil, pneumatic to that engine to control the fire. The kitchen engine, jet engine, is nothing more than a controlled fire. Now, when that fire is no control, now you've got a problem.
Exactly.
But keep in mind, when you think of engine fire versus engine failure, then an engine fire is still producing thrust. Imagine. So you're still getting thrust from that engine. That's important, depending on when the fire starts, as opposed to when the engine fails. So I think in this case on takeoff, they had a engine failure combined with an engine fire. And so you got to picture now, if you're just at rotation lifting off, where the other engine is at max power, when you lose that thrust, what's the airplane going to do? It's going to turn direction of that engine. So if the right engine fails, then the airplane's going to turn that direction. So it's up to you to use your control surfaces, your aileron, rudder, things like that, in order to keep the airplane going in the right direction. But feel safe and secure, because every time we do a simulated training flight, we practice, and you're never released. You're not successful. You will not fly the line if you cannot do what we call a V1 cut, which is losing the engine on takeoff.
Wow. Wow. That was, you know what, thank you for that lesson, because I, of course, my audience doesn't know, I didn't know, and, you know, unless you're a pilot, you know these things, but how comforting to know that he had been trained, so it wasn't as though he had to kind of fumble it, and never, because they're so well trained, but he really knew what to do, because he had been trained to do that particular situation, which is really comforting to know. So I'm glad you broke that down, because that is the topic as of today is February the 24th. And so for those who are tuning in, and if you tune in later on, we're making reference to the United Airlines flight that took off and had to make an emergency landing. So this is what we're making reference to. So if you're listening later on, this is what you can go back to and find the information. But John, that was good. That's comforting to know. So he really did a miraculous, well, God willing, he did a miraculous job in bringing that plane back down safely.
Yes, yes, he did.
Boy. Wow. Well, that was a lesson on that. That wasn't planned on this interview, but I'm sure that that is definitely comforting for people who may be a little apprehensive about flying. Just trust that the pilots are getting trained in every imaginable emergency there could be, which is really comforting to know. So get back to you. So you started flying in 73 for the commercial for Delta Airlines. Now, was it hard to get the job? And at that point, you being one of the first, it had to be a challenge.
Well, yes and no. I was very fortunate coming back from Vietnam in December of 72. And keep in mind what had been happening in commercial aviation during that period, when very few airlines had any African-American pilots. So some carriers were actively seeking out qualified African-American pilots, and Delta was one. And so my training in getting out of the Air Force in December of 72 was great, because at that time Delta was in search of hopefully finding, locating some trained, qualified African-American pilots to fly for Delta.
And how were you received by the pilots?
Well, you got to imagine that, of course, Delta is a Southern carrier, and there were always those who didn't necessarily want black pilots in the cockpits. And there were even passengers who didn't want black pilots in the cockpit. But, you know, you're there, they're not. As long as you do your job, I feel as though, and you're qualified to do it, then they have nothing to say.
Yeah, yeah. They had to operate just like anything else. As you and I had our little sidebar conversation the other day, and we were talking about, you saw how the pilots mistreated the black flight attendants. And, you know, that's the other side of the story of Stars in the Sky, how and what we had to go through in breaking the color barrier. But it was eye-opening to you because you were fighting your own issue, and then you realized that what we were doing, and at that point you were able to help us. And we all appreciated that, because let me tell you, ladies and gentlemen, there's nothing more handsome than to see John Bailey and others walk down that concourse with that uniform on. It was such a proud moment for me, and I still grin from ear to ear, John, when I reminisce those days of walking down the hall and looking up and seeing you. And what a joy.
Well, thank you, Casey. I believe coming out of the military as we did, and we were, in addition to pilots, we're Air Force officers, so we were trained leaders. And that time, Delta had very few military pilots. So we came out of the Air Force with more total experience than a lot of the captains we were flying with. And I think they knew that. So very few were willing to challenge our capabilities. And so for me, you as a black flight attendant were treated, I was quite upset at the way some of the white pilots treated our black flight attendants, and I made it known in some cases, and as I did with some of the guys who worked the ramp. Keep in mind that during the period when we as black pilots were allowed to fly these multi-million-dollar airplanes, the guys on the black ramp guys were not allowed to even drive the tugs or the vehicles on the ramp. So there's a huge disparity in how we were treated as African-Americans working for Delta or other carriers as well.
You're telling me something I don't know. I've never heard that before. So you're talking about the guys that were on the ramps, the ones that pushed back the planes? Those guys?
As well as driving up. That came later. And don't forget, at that time, only the mechanics were allowed to drive those tugs. Later on, they allowed the other ramp guys, the supervisors, to drive tugs. But at that time, the vehicles on the ramp that you saw with the baggage, they weren't allowed to drive those either. That
black,
came later.
The black guys were not allowed to drive those. Only the white guys could drive them?
That is correct. Yeah, and Phil,
John, I've never heard that before.
And we were able to fly the jets, but they weren't able to drive the vehicles.
I don't know how my audience is responding, but my mouth is wide open because I was flew for Delta for 35 years. That story we have to talk about maybe another time, but I never knew that. I never knew that they weren't able to because they weren't qualified, or it's because they were black.
I think the latter.
Never, ever knew that. Wow. You're blowing my mind. This is Black History Month, and my mind is, my mind, you're blowing my mind on that one. Okay. So we do see. But getting to your point, I just want to add it to your point, though. You're right. And that was one of the things that I knew flying, that the white pilots weren't as qualified as the black pilots coming in because you guys were Air Force. And then at this point, too, from another angle, we could tell the difference, the black flight attendants, a few of us that were there, but the attitudes changed. You could tell whether you're black or white. You could tell a military pilot as opposed to, and as I used to say, they were sharecroppers because Delta hired a lot of sharecroppers back then, the good old boys, to fly the planes back then, correct?
Correct.
Yep. And so here we come in with the Air Force guys who really pull up the qualifications, actually, of the men that were in the cockpit.
So if you can imagine, we had gone through the most intense pilot training program in the history of mankind, Air Force pilot training. You can give the Navy some props too, but Air Force I think is better. And then we not only flew in the civilian sector, but we flew during war as well.
Exactly.
So we're able to not just fight the war, but we're having people shoot at us while we're doing the job. And so for us to come to a job like Delta, hey, that's a piece of cake. No
it was
one
a vacation.
Absolutely.
Oh, my goodness. You know, you take things for granted. It's just like when we look at basketball players and or people with talent, painters and singers and everything, engineers and doctors, you think it's so easy. It isn't easy. It's what you have to go through to perfect your profession and come out looking like this is a piece of cake. And here you just gave us a nice little rundown on what you personally had gone through. You personally had been in the war. You personally had been shot at. And to come back, you're right. Flying for Delta Airlines was a piece of cake.
Yep. But it was fun. And it was a great career, Casey.
Well, yeah, it is a great career, and Delta is. And speaking of that, that's a good way to move on to this next subject that I want you to be able to talk about. And one of the things that I do when I'm out on the road with my book signings or going to the high school and talking, I try to introduce the field of aviation to young black kids because I don't understand, and maybe you can tell me, why is aviation not a field that is promoted or to give them? There's so many different things you can do in the airlines. You can be a doctor. You can be a nurse. You can be air traffic controller. But they don't gear or steer the youth into going into aviation. And with that, you are doing your part with your organization in answering the question that I just presented to you. So give me an idea. Why do you think aviation is not a field that is pushed?
I believe that, first of all, unlike those white Americans where maybe they have family members who are doctors or lawyers or pilots, most of our kids don't ever get to see a pilot. You know, and there you don't hear about pilot school the same way you hear about med school or law school. You very seldom hear the discussion households of pilot school. And so it's up to people like me and others like me to go out into the community and expose our kids to what it's like to not just be a pilot, but be a flight attendant, engineer, air traffic controller, flight attendant, all the great careers that are available in aviation.
Yes.
And what I tried to do when we started OBEP back in 1976, the Organization of Black Airline Pilots at that time, one of our goals was to go to each and every community to expose the career of aviation to black youngsters.
Okay.
And
you did this through the schools?
Through the schools as well as through our ACE camps. In the 1992, I believe, we were fortunate to partner with the FAA to begin what we call FAA ACE, the FAA Aviation Career Education Program. Unlike a flight school here that's called Aviation Career Enrichment, we partnered with the FAA. Well, 4 or 5 years after that, the FAA's funding was cut, and we had to make the decision to go on our own to fund the ACE camps, which we did successfully in over 21 cities. And I think I'm no longer a member of the Organization of Black Aerospace Professionals, but I believe they're continuing those ACE camps throughout the country.
Mm-hmm. Yes, I think they still are.
If I could throw in a plug for Delta, Delta went so far as to have their own Delta OBAP ACE program where we had two schools, 30 in each of kids primarily of color, that we expose to aviation by going to military facilities, corporate facilities, Air Force bases, air traffic control towers, to expose them to all the different careers in aviation. Delta was so nice that they allowed kids to go into executive offices of our VPs and EVPs so the kids could see what the Delta executives were doing. And we're fortunate that they were the first to do that with OBAP. And then from that point on, after ACE, we started what we call the flight line, where those youngsters who had excelled in ACE in taking a test and being prompt and doing the things they were supposed to do were allowed to begin the flight program, where Delta paid 15 youngsters to receive up to 15 hours. I'm sorry, 10 youngsters received 15 flight hours, leading towards getting a private pilot's license and hopefully soloing.
That's amazing. And kudos to Delta Airlines for doing that, because that is unbelievable that Delta would be so supportive like that. So that is a wonderful thing to know. Now, that program is, you're not sure if it's still going on?
No, well, not during the COVID crisis. But I believe once the pandemic is over, I'm pretty sure they're going to resume the programs, yes.
Oh, and just for a pause for that one, how do you find out about this? Is it through the website?
Yeah, the OBAP website. It's
OBAP.org.
I'm no longer working with that organization that we helped found, but that information is available, and kids should take advantage of that program. Absolutely.
Okay, but now you're not affiliated with that organization, but you have another organization.
Yes, we have the what we call the BAP program, that stands for Black Aviation Airline Pioneers, where we expose the kids, of all kids, to careers in aviation through our speaker series that's sponsored by the Fulton County, and it's held every month at the Fulton County Aviation Community Cultural Center on the Charlie Brown Airport, the Fulton County Charlie Brown Airport. Of course, we're not having speakers now because of COVID, but we hopefully will resume the speaker series by September. We'll take a look at it then to see how well the pandemic is being controlled and decide whether or not we want to bring kids and speakers together to learn more about aviation.
So for the audience, let me repeat the name of this organization. BAP is the acronym for the program, and is Black Aviation Airline Pioneers. And John, is there a website?
Yes, it's www.bap.info.
Info. Okay, so that would be, so that's BAAP, and it stands for Black Aviation Airline Pioneers. Once you get the speaking series back up, once COVID allows us to break free and have a life again, do you do recruiting through the high schools, or how do you get the information out to people? I know how they can find you for the audience and for those that are listening, but how do you generally let the public know about this particular program?
Through email and, of course, word of mouth, a primary source. But we do go to schools. We go to ROTC detachments, and we have a close relationship with the Air Force Academy, as well as the Naval Academy and the military promote our speaker series.
Oh, give me a few of the impressive speakers that you've had. I know you have had many, but can you just give us an idea? Give me one or two that have come and give me their background so I can kind of formulate in my mind what type of topics you cover.
Oh, my goodness. Let's see. Tony Marshall is retired United pilot, but while he was in the Air Force, he flew the F-4 jet over North Vietnam, was shot down, and was a prisoner of war for almost a year before he was released under Richard Nixon. So he's been there a number of times talking about what it was like to be shot down, to bail out, be captured, and be a prisoner of war. But also he can talk about his career at United Airlines and also at the Air Force Academy.
Oh, my.
I've had, Dave Bushy, who was the senior vice president for Delta Airlines over flight operations. He was my boss when I was working. And he talks about, from the executive's viewpoint, how the airline looks at buying airplanes, hiring pilots, opening up new bases, talks about the behind-the-scenes administration of how an airline operates. We've had aviation lawyers who talk about aviation legal times when, for instance, imagine if you're on an airplane and a bag falls out of the overhead bin and hits you on the head. Legally, what resources do you have? What can you do as a passenger? So the lawyer came and talked about what you have at your disposal as a passenger on the airline, and talks about the legal standpoint of going into a new city, opening up a new facility. If there's an accident, what does the airline do in those cases? So kids learn that. We've had one of the most exciting guests is Donnie Cochran, who is the first African-American to file lead for the Blue Angels. And Donnie talked what's it like to do an overhead loop with three other airplanes right next to you. He's got a great video of flying lead and being able to see aircraft two and three on his wingtips, and he's flying inverted. So we've had some great speakers, and we have additional speakers like that coming forward.
You just, every one of them, I wish I could have been there, because both of those, all of those topics are so interesting to me. And as we said earlier, this is the whole point, and I love the way your point of view on this. It isn't just that you have to be a pilot, but there's so many wonderful fields in aviation to be pursued. And you just named some that to me would be quite interesting. And, you know, I never knew these different things. When I was flying, I was intimidated because there weren't any black women, female pilots. So obviously I didn't think that was an opportunity that was opened up, and then being black. But just the things that you have said, and you have boys and girls in this speaking that attend the speaking series, and their parents, I suppose, right?
Oh, absolutely. The parents are, of course, invited. And actually, we're of the 100 to 120 attendees that we generally have, half are more retired pilots, are retired engineers, active pilots, as well as our youngsters who want to become pilots or have some career in the aviation field. And, of course, you're scheduled, and I believe you've agreed to be our speaker for sometime next year. Isn't that correct, Casey?
Absolutely, positively, I'll be there. I will be there, only just to speak, but I'm going to be, as soon as this airplane, as soon as I get my vaccination, I am going to be on the airplane back and forth, because these are some of the, your speakers, I've looked at some of the list, and I've, it's always been a conflict of my schedule that I haven't been able to make it, but I definitely will be putting this on my calendar. And one of the interesting stories that you and I share for one of the people that went through your program, and I'll let you just go ahead and tell a little bit about her, is Leslie Irby. And she was on my radio show a couple of weeks ago, and she is the first handicap pilot, female black handicap pilot. So I want you to tell a little bit about her, because you remember her when she was through, went through your program.
Absolutely. Leslie was one of my favorites. I actually attended her high school graduation. Leslie was a great pilot, a great young woman who listened. She listened in classes, but she was very quiet, but you knew she was absorbing all the information. And then we lost track of her after she finished the flight line, lost track of her. Of course, I didn't know she had had the accident.
Yeah.
But I have so much I follow. I think I'm mentoring over 40 now, that quite often I lose track of some of the students in my programs that I would like to know where they are and what they're doing. But fortunately, she was able to locate me, and we've gotten in touch with each other. So now we talk frequently, and I'm trying to help her as best I can, because she's unique in that she's doing something that nobody else that I've dealt with has ever done. And she's a very brave young lady. I'm very proud of her.
Very, very proud. I'm telling you, she's such – people need to follow her. So remember the name, Leslie Irby, I-R-B-Y, and you must follow her, because she is absolutely amazing, and her attitude is just phenomenal. And as you said, you had lost contact. You didn't know. She took her first flight when she was about 14, I think. And when mm-hmm. she went through your program and you lost contact, it's probably because obviously she had had the accident, because she had the accident when she was 23.
Right. Mm-hmm.
Uh-huh. So she's now been paralyzed 6 years, but she has never, ever let that stop her. So there we go, another phase of being in aviation, how you don't let anyone take away your dream.
Exactly, exactly. And speaking of speakers, I think my very first speaker was Brenda Robinson, who was the first African-American female to finish naval aviation training. And you could go online and Google Brenda Robinson, and she ended up her career retiring from American Airlines as a pilot.
Okay.
She was one of my first speakers. And then, of course, we had Stacey Harris, who a three-star general in the Air Force, who recently retired. And she was one of my initial speakers. She went through Air Force pilot training, flew the same airplane, the C-141, as me. And then went on to become a three-star general. And so we've had some great speakers during the 5-6 years that we've had the speaker series.
Oh, my. Well, that is, like I said at the beginning of the show, this is Black Aviation, Black History Month, because what you have just said is that's introducing the world to some people that you should know in Black Aviation that – people just don't know. If you're not in aviation, you never have the opportunity to know of all the wonderful things that black or people of color have done. And I think those two things that you have just pointed out are wonderful accomplishments. Brenda Robinson is a delightful person. And I just had a contact with our very first, for Delta Airlines, our very first female captain. And I know you know Stephanie Johnson.
Yes, I do.
Exactly. And she was on, and she's delightful. But once again, look how long it has taken for all of this to happen, because she made captain in 2016, and this is 2021.
Yeah. Fabulous young lady. I followed her career at Northwest and now with Delta. We're very fortunate to have her with Delta.
Absolutely.
Similar to Dana Nelson, is the first African-American female who was hired by Delta, who is also right now in the Air Force Reserve as a one-star general. And I'm looking forward to when Dana becomes a Delta captain and I could be at her ceremony and meet her when she comes back from her first flight as a captain.
Oh, my. Oh, my. And like I said, ladies and gentlemen, audience, Dana Nelson was the very first one. Now, what did you say again? Her position was with Delta. She's the very first one to be hired by Delta as
Correct.
A pilot.
As a pilot. Very first
Correct.
African-American female hired
female.
By Delta as a pilot.
Yes. Yeah. And then Stephanie Johnson is the very first. And what year? So tell me the difference, the year span here, because we do understand that Stephanie came from Northwest. But what is the difference in the time span Dana was hired as to when Stephanie made captain?
I believe Dana was hired before Stephanie. Stephanie
yes.
became a captain, the merger with Northwest.
Yes.
Well, Dana was hired before the merger with Northwest.
Yes, yes. So if there's a division or not a division but a clarity to that is she really started as Delta from the very beginning. So when she makes captain, she will be, as we say in our terminology we use for Delta Airlines, OD, original Delta. So when she makes captain, she will actually be the first that started with Delta and made captain. Female.
Correct.
Oh,
correct.
Wow. Well, you have to keep me up on that because I definitely want to be able to get her on the radio show.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Yeah, I think you'd love. She's a fabulous young lady.
Well, for the audience, too, this is a little shout-out as to what's coming. My children's book, I have a new book that's coming out, and it's called Stars and Beyond. And it's two children's books. It's a coloring version for children from about 6 to 8, and then it'll be a later one for children that are older, and they will be able to read about all of these wonderful black pioneers that are coming out. And Dana is definitely in the book, so we'll be able to read the history on that, and hopefully they will be in the libraries and in the schools coming up soon. But I really am so proud to bring honor to both of these ladies, Stephanie Johnson and Dana Nelson. So you must stay tuned for all of that. So what else are you doing, John, that you are helping to bring awareness to our youth in aviation? That's enough, but is there anything else that you're doing?
Well, there's a book that we composed. It's an essay by 40 of the first African-American pilots to be hired by the major airlines. It's called Flying Beyond the Barrier, Memoirs by the First 40 African-American Airline Pilots. And that book is available on our website or through Amazon.com if anyone is interested in reading more about Black aviation.
It is a great coffee table book. I have the book, and, you know, it's wonderful. I'm glad you guys came up with that idea to put it all together. And was that one of your brilliant ideas? Were you in on that?
No, actually, it was not my idea. Molly Norwood, the wife of the one and only Bill Norwood, the first African-American pilot for United, it was actually Molly's idea along with Ray Washington, and an African-American pilot for American who was also retired.
Oh, that was brilliant. That was brilliant.
Yeah.
And speaking of that, statistics, like we just said, how I just think, sad to say, it took this long, 2016, before we got our first female black captain. Still, we are behind as far as the percentage of black pilots because do you know what the statistic is as to how many pilots Delta, let's just go with Delta. Do you know how many pilots Delta has and how many of those are pilots of color?
No, since I retired in 04, so I no longer have those numbers, Casey. I'm sorry.
But at one point,
at one point we're well under 1%, even less than that. As a matter of fact, when I was flying, there were more African Americans who flew with the Tuskegee Airmen or who finished the Tuskegee Airmen program before World War II than we had black pilots flying for the airlines in 2001. So the numbers are not great.
No, they're not impressive. They're depressing. They're not impressive, that's for sure.
Agreed.
And there we go again, back to the original question. Why would there's more pilots now in the Air Force? Why would they not come out of the Air Force? I mean, I know you probably don't know, but can you give us a little insight? Why would you think that wouldn't be the first thing they would do is to come and apply for a commercial airline?
Well, a career as a military pilot is a good career. I believe that there are some who believe they'll make more money in the civilian sector, but imagine the ability to retire after 20 years and get an Air Force retirement or 30 years. I think that's quite enticing to some young pilots who want to stay and fly.
Okay.
The military, it's a great career, and I think a lot more people should consider the military as a career. The airlines are great. The military is great. They're both great. It's we all make choices.
Okay. Well, that's interesting. I had not thought about that, but when we're saying these numbers, and we definitely know, because you could retire so young. You know, if you went in early enough, you could come out of the service, in your 30s, I would say, possibly, with full benefits, and then you could start a whole new career. I mean, it's just such a wonderful choice, an opportunity.
Absolutely. You can retire after 20 years in the Air Force and come out of the Air Force and still fly for Delta while you're getting your Air Force retirement checks.
I know.
That's not bad.
No, that isn't bad at all. It sounds like a good deal to me. And I think if I were trying to steer anyone into aviation, that's exactly the picture I would paint for them. You retire so early and you're still healthy. And John, you don't come out of the service and start with a commercial airline as a captain. So if you didn't really want to become a captain but still enjoyed the thrill of flying and the benefits, you could stay in the right seat forever, couldn't you?
Yeah, for an airline, there are guys who remain in the right seat for the entire career. You're not forced to fly captain. I think the airline expects you to fly captain at some point, but I don't think anything would be said if you decided you want to be a first officer the entire time.
Yeah. I think we just painted a perfect picture for somebody. I hope someone's listening. I think that is a perfect way to enjoy your life. You still get to fly. You're getting two great checks. You're healthy. And it's a wonderful opportunity. Sounds like somebody should sign up to me.
Look, as a matter of fact, just yesterday, I talked to a young man I mentor who is retired from the Air Force. His name is Kenneth Cart, Major, and he just received a letter from FedEx. He'll be interviewing with FedEx next month, I believe. March, next month. And hopefully he'll go from the Air Force directly into to FedEx. And I'm very proud of Kenneth. Of course, I'd rather he be with Delta, but we're not hiring right now, so he chose FedEx, which is fine.
Which is fine. You know, just so we get to see him fly and he gets to enjoy his life and this is something he wants to do. Thank heavens for FedEx And so we'll be very happy if he serves us that way. Not a problem. Well, is there anything else that you would like us to know? I want you to give us BAPS website and information once again as we are closing out the show. And stay tuned for your speaking series to come back up. And so we want to be able to promote that and draw attention. So if you give that to us one more time, I think we could wrap this wonderful show up because it surely has been an informative show.
Okay, that's www.BAAP, phonetically that's Bravo Alpha Alpha Papa dot info, not com, not net, info, I-N-F-O.
Perfect. And I do have that on the website. So with that, John, I am going to say thank you so much for taking your time because I know you're busy and crazy running around doing things in spite of and being very careful during the virus. We do know that.
Yes.
So I want to thank you so much.
Thank you for inviting me. It's been a pleasure talking to you.
Okay, and we may do part three, so we'll come back later on after the virus is over and allow you just to come back and give us another update on what's happening because I would appreciate you coming back and doing that. Keep everybody inspired about going into aviation. It's important.
Absolutely.
Okay, thank you. All right, and for everyone else, I hope that you enjoyed this show today. It was delightful to me. I enjoyed talking to John. It was full of a lot of great information, and I hope it inspired you to maybe pursue a career in aviation. There's so many wonderful fields, as John pointed out, from some of the fantastic speakers in his speaking series from BAP. And once again, that is B as in boy, AAP. Those are the symbols for it. And the name of it is Black Aviation Airline Pioneers. So please continue to check my website, get the information, stay tuned. And if you're in the Atlanta area, come out, go out to one of these speaking series and bring the young coming, the girls and the boys, because it's not just for the boys, and allow them to have the opportunity to meet some of these wonderful blacks in aviation, trigger up that energy and excitement about maybe joining and being a part of the aviation field. It is a fantastic field. So I hope that you enjoyed the show today. Please stay tuned. Come back again. I am Casey Grant. I am the host of the Fly Girl Show. And as I always say, I always had tried to bring interesting people to you, enlighten you, and to inform you on some wonderful careers or people of interest. So with that, I am going to sign off, and I hope that you will have a wonderful day. Stay tuned. There is more to come. Have a very happy day and Black History Month. Learn something new. Learn something new. Thank you so much, and have a great day. Bye.